Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Dugout from Sports Mall. I'm Pascal Lemaire and Barney Corker is here again to talk Premier League, the League Cup Final, La Liga and more. Barnes, let's start with yesterday's game at Old Trafford. Man United beating Arsenal with a load of kids out. Have the Gunners blown it in the title race?
It looks that way, doesn't it? And scarcely believable that they've done it again because, you know, this season we've said so many times that it's their best chance to win the title since they last won it with the Invincibles. With so many teams dropping points that would usually be up there around there, United included, of course, Chelsea the champions, nowhere near defending their title, City struggling as well. It just looked made for Arsenal to do it, and throughout large parts of the season, they looked like they had the mental fortitude to finally do it, but they've just collapsed again in the last week or so, and it's all the more disappointing as it came after that victory against Leicester, which you thought would just be catapult them up to the top of the table. To win in that sort of style against the league leaders, having been behind, to get it in the 95th minute winner, was, you know, that's got to give everyone at the club a massive boost. So to then draw against Hull in the FA Cup, lose to Barcelona in the Champions League, okay, that wasn't too surprising, but then lose to Manchester United. A trip to Old Trafford's never an easy game, especially for Arsenal, where United will always raise their game because it's such a big rivalry. But you look at the two team sheets in that match and you have to go a long way back to find two more mismatched teams than that. United's just so injury-ridden at the moment. It's such a disappointing result for Arsenal. A draw, you know, might have been a satisfactory result, but to lose that, particularly with some of the other results that happened at the weekend, is just absolutely gutting for them, and it's a huge, huge, maybe fatal blow to their title hopes.
I know, it's been such, like you said, since that massive Leicester win, those three games. I mean, even the Barca one where, you know, they actually, you know, did okay in that game against Barca, who probably weren't firing on all cylinders, but they couldn't take their chance when they came. And obviously, that's them, well, pretty much definitely out of Europe now. And then, yeah, like I said, against United, with that team United put out, you know, you had, you know, midfielders playing in defence, you know, all the youngsters there. I mean, I know they're very hungry to impress these youngsters, but, you know, you had a guy named on the bench, I can't remember his name actually, the guy that came off the bench in the second half. He obviously, and then Rojo getting injured, one of the other senior defenders also getting injured during the game. Rashford, you know, did fantastically obviously on his debut in the Europa League a few days before, but then some, well, just the senior players underperforming. I mean, Sanchez, for a good month now since he, you know, came back from his latest injury, he's been really below par. Just, I mean, when he first came back, I remember the first game he came back, I remember watching and thinking he looks really hungry here, and you could just see he wanted to get the ball and he looks so dangerous. But in every game since then that I've seen Arsenal, he keeps fading in and out, really not doing a lot. Ozil, you know, he'll get another assist for swinging in the free kick for Welbeck, but, you know, he's been quiet in those games. He was really poor against Barcelona. Ozil struggled to really have an impact, and all these senior players, and then you've got people like Gabriel at the back just making fatal errors, that just gifting, gifted Rashford his first goal with that really bad clearance and then didn't track him for the second goal. You know, I know Rashford's done well to get into these positions and he's stuck them away well, but he shouldn't have had it nowhere near as easy to score those goals. So just so many players up and down the pitch not performing, and, you know, where it leaves them in the title race now, 5 points behind Leicester. And the way it's going for them with that massive game against Spurs coming up as well, I think that, you know, maybe they have blown it again.
Yeah, and the thing is, they could be 8 points behind Leicester by the time they play their next match, because Leicester playing on Tuesday, Arsenal on Wednesday. So then it's looking even tougher for them. And you look at their running, they've got quite a lot of tough fixtures coming up. They've got Man City in the penultimate game of the season as well, which, at the Etihad, that's a really tough game. So they've probably got the toughest running of any of the teams in the top four. You'd say now, with Man City having a game in hand for them, okay, they're 4 points behind Arsenal, but I'd personally put Man City in a stronger position now to finish higher in the table than Arsenal with the damage that United defeat has done. And you're right to point out the defence. There's been a lot of praise for Rashford, and he deserves a lot of praise for coming in and scoring 4 goals in 2 games. Absolute dream start to his career, particularly as it came out of the blue pretty much in the Europa League when he wasn't initially named in the starting lineup, but came in late to score those 2 goals. But Arsenal didn't make it too hard for him to get those 2 goals. Good positioning, good instinct, good predatory play to finish them off and be in the right place at the right time. Something you can't really teach that, but Arsenal's defending, as you rightly pointed out, was terrible. And even for the the third goal under Herrera's goal, okay, it took a big deflection, you can look at a bit of luck for that, but they just gave him too much time and space from that position in the field. So it's just poor performances all round defensively. You can't afford to ship that many goals against the United side, who they've been terrible going forward for large parts of the season. So to concede three at Old Trafford like that, really, really disappointing for Arsene Wenger. And there's a lot of criticism for Theo Walcott, especially another pretty nondescript performance from him. When he's on, I think it's £140,000 a week, he's still wondering if he's a striker or a wide man. He's still wondering, is he good enough to make this Arsenal starting 11? He just hasn't really progressed enough over the last 10 years. You look all the way back to when he was named by England in the World Cup, scored to much controversy, having not played a game for Arsenal at that point, and he just hasn't really progressed into that. And it's just all through the Arsenal team, there's players like that who just don't seem good enough. Okay, they've got great players like Sanchez and Ozil, who, as you point out, have been a bit inconsistent in recent weeks, but on the most part have been fantastic this season. The likes of Ramsey as well has had a decent season, but there's a lot of players who are just a tiny bit short of making them into the title contenders. We've talked about Walcott and Giroud, are they good enough to lead the line? And I think in recent weeks it might have proved that they're not good enough to lead the line for a title winning side.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, going back to that Barcelona game, you know, they created chances against a team like Barca, who usually, you know, canter to most victories. And they say if they had a clinical finisher in the box, you know, for the Oxlade-Chamberlain one especially, they could have easily got a goal in the first half there, and that might have changed the complexion of that game. And then you've got Barca maybe chasing it a bit more, and it could have all been different. And, you know, it all goes back to Arsene Wenger, really, doesn't it? You know, he's there on the... I mean, I know Van Gaal, you know, wrote all the headlines yesterday with that ridiculous fall that he did on the touchline, but, you know, Wenger, the spotlight's on him again. Has he done enough? You know, probably not. And you think... I mean, I think he probably will still be there in the summer unless he, you know, decides to go himself. I can't really see the board getting rid of him, and it's whether he makes a move this summer. There's talk of, you know, Higuain... Maybe leaving Napoli this summer, but then would that... I mean, I know Higuain's had a great season. Would that be much of an upgrade for you on, you know, the likes of Giroud and Walcott?
Yeah, I think Higuain would be. He's one of the best strikers in Europe at the moment this season. He would certainly be an upgrade on Walcott. I think Giroud, he goes through these spells of seemingly scoring in every game, and I've mentioned how impressed I am with his one-touch finishing. He scores so many goals just one touch inside the box, and I do actually think Giroud is a very, very good centre-forward. He's just not world-class, and that's probably what the team is lacking at the moment, and has lacked for a long time, arguably since Thierry Henry left the club. So it's about a decade now they've been probably lacking that, and that could catapult them into being genuine title contenders and one of the better sides in Europe as well. Because behind the striker, they've got a team which can really play. Okay, they make defensive lapses now and again, but they've got a team that can really play some good football. So if they just had a striker who's going to get you 30 goals in all competitions in a season, then that would put them on a completely different plane, I think. On the Arsene Wenger point, whether he's going to leave at the end of the season, there's obviously been so much speculation over him for about 4 or 5 years now, if not longer, whether he's going to stay, whether it's about time Arsenal got rid of him. I've always tended to back him, but this season would be particularly disappointing. One of the most disappointing seasons in a long time. If they fail to win the title this season with the race so open, and especially if Leicester, especially if Tottenham actually win the title, that's going to be an even bigger blow for Arsenal. You look at the other teams who would have expected to maybe be up there or thereabouts. They've all either changed their manager or are going to change their manager in the summer. So you'd expect Man United to be like that with Van Gaal. He's expected to leave in the summer. City are getting rid of Pellegrini. Chelsea have got rid of Mourinho. Even Liverpool got rid of Brendan Rodgers as well. So they've all obviously got ambitions and are telling their current managers that they haven't really done a good enough job, with the possible exception of Man City, where just a better man's become available. So something for Arsenal to look at, whether they're ambitiously looking to match all those teams again and get back to the very top, it might be time for change. I don't really like saying managers, it's time for managers to go, and Wenger, his legacy there is incredible. He's done a superb job, but, you know, it'll be 10 years without a league title now, and there's been some really good chances for him to do it. None better than this year. So if they fail to do it this year, then serious questions will be asked of him, I think.
Yeah, and I think the thing in terms of who would fit in there, you know, you'd probably say the way that Arsenal have played their football the last, you know, 15 years, you would have said that Guardiola would be the perfect man to go there and maybe just take them to that next level. But he's obviously now going to City, and you just wonder, I mean, like you said, Wenger, he's done an incredible job there ever since he took over, and he's obviously the only one really left of, you know, the long-lasting managers in the Premier League. So it'd be harsh for him to go, but then you just wonder who would be able to do a better job than him, because he knows the club so well, and is it just the fact that he hasn't, you know, signed the right players? And in terms of his coaching and management, you know, Arsenal always plays some of the best football in the league. So is it just the fact that he hasn't been, I don't know, backed by the board, or he hasn't really gone after the right players? But going back to the striker point, you know, you say about the world-class striker thing, just, you know, you look at the two teams above Arsenal in the table now. So you've got Spurs, who obviously Harry Kane, he's had a fantastic couple of years, but he's still very young. And then you've obviously got Vardy having the year of his life. But would either of these, would you say either of those two Englishmen, if say they were playing for Arsenal, would they really make that difference for them?
Well, that's an interesting point. I think Kane is proving that he would be he's turning into a really good striker. There was question marks whether he'd be a one season wonder, but he's really backed that up this season, and his work rate is impressive. Impresses me every time I see him, and his finishing is top notch. He's a really good striker, a really good finisher. Vardy, again, the questions that dogged Kane last season are going to dog Vardy next season, if he's a one season wonder or not. If he can back that up, he's obviously had a fantastic season, and you'd have to think with him in the side, although he's probably not as technically gifted or as good a finisher maybe as Giroud might be, his work rate and everything is something that Arsenal tend to be lacking. Giroud doesn't really give them that. Walcott doesn't really give them that. He's got a lot of pace, but he doesn't close the defence down with as much gusto as the likes of Jamie Vardy has. But then again, it's the style of the team as well. That's not really Arsenal's style to do that, whereas Leicester were all about high-octane stuff, energetic play. Arsenal, one of their best players over the last season has been Sanchez, and that's how he plays, and that's been really good. So maybe if they had another player like him, it would help them. But I don't think they want to look for Jamie Vardy style player. I think more of a Higuain style player who can join in with the fluid passing moves rather than just, you know, breaking on the counter attack, because Arsenal are always going to dominate possession, and players like Vardy and to a lesser extent Kane are better on the break than they are maybe when teams are dominating possession and you need to break down the opposition team.
Yeah, and I guess you either maybe want a striker who's just going to run for ages and just cause the defence loads of problems, or maybe if you compare it to, you know, the striker who was on last year's title winning team, Diego Costa, that sort of player who's going to really, you know, annoy the other defence, and, you know, really just, because the things Costa does, I mean, I really hate watching him. I think he's an absolute nightmare to watch, and the way that he plays the game, I think, is wrong in some senses, but he can really, you know, get to the other defence, and that makes them just lose their head a bit, and maybe they won't focus as much on certain things and they'll think more about him individually as opposed to their job in the back line. And maybe that's what Arsenal need, and like you say, maybe Giroud and Walcott, you know, very good at certain things, but just missing that sort of complete package, or maybe certain elements that might just help Arsenal where in like areas they're lacking.
Yeah, and Arsenal, that might spread throughout the whole team if they had a Diego Costa-like figure, someone who upsets the apple cart a bit. None of their players really do that. Sanchez, he's got a bit of bite about him, but he's never really the aggressor in challenges. He can just handle himself, really. The only player, really, or players over the last couple of seasons they've had is, you know, Coquelin or Flamini in that defensive midfield role. And you think back to the really successful Arsenal team, all of their players had a bit of bite to them. Adams, yeah. Keown, Vieira, everyone like that could really handle themselves, and haven't really got that in this current Arsenal side. That team had them throughout the side. You'd always expect one to be in defensive midfield in that Vieira role, which Arsenal have to a lesser extent carried on through Coquelin and Flamini down the years, but throughout the team they don't really have that bite to them. You know, you can't imagine Ozil being up for the fight if someone goes hard on him early on in the game, but they just need a bit more strength about them throughout the whole squad and determination. If teams rough them up a bit, then, you know, it's a good way to get under Arsenal's skin. And with someone like Diego Costa, obviously we're not suggesting they could sign Costa, but with someone like Diego Costa in the side, then, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher for other teams to do that.
Yeah, and I think comparing some of the players, like you said, those the Vieira likes, you know, they were so good at what they did, and but then when you compare them to like Flamini, you know, that tackle he made on Messi is just so stupid. The one in the, like, it's just that they don't really have their heads, some of these players sometimes. And even Elneny, you know, their new defensive midfielder they signed in January, when he came on yesterday, he made so many stupid decisions, like just silly fouls, just like on the ankle of the other players. There was two or three times he did that when Arsenal really chasing the game, just gifting United free kicks for them to waste another, you know, 30 seconds, and it just really not having their heads. And it's the same with Flamini against Barca, like I said, with that tackle. So for the time being, Elneny, you know, from what I've seen, he's been very energetic in the couple of FA Cup games I've watched him playing, but, you know, yesterday when the pressure was really on, he couldn't handle it. He was just, like I said, giving away silly free kicks and stuff. So it looks like maybe they need that leader player in midfield, and then maybe something different up front, like you said. But let's move on to the other title contenders this weekend in action. What Arsenal did yesterday made worse by how Leicester, I mean, Leicester and Spurs both winning, but the way they won as well. Leicester, you know, struggled for large parts of that game against Norwich, didn't they? But in the end came through, Ajoa with the goal, 89th minute, I think it was. And then Spurs fell behind early to Swansea. Looked for a long time like they weren't going to get back in it because Fabianski made a load of good saves. But eventually, Nasser Chadli got the equaliser, and then Danny Rose coming up with the winner. So they both get 3 points. Leicester go 5 clear of Arsenal now. Spurs 3 clear of Arsenal. What did you make of the Leicester game? You watched that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And before the match, I was expecting the 2 week break they had after that devastating Arsenal defeat. I thought that 2 week break would be perfect for them just to get their heads clear again. Ranieri gave them a full week off, which he said he'd never done before, never given players more than a 3 day period off during the season. So it was an unprecedented move for him, and I thought that would have been a good move. But it sort of went the other way a bit. They lacked all their usual fluency. They never really got going. And you know, this is top scorers in the league against the worst defence in the league. You expected a pretty comfortable home victory, but Norwich, to their credit, they defended really well. They made things really difficult for Leicester. They closed down. They played a different sort of formation with 3 at the back, which dropped to 5 at the back when Leicester had the ball. And they sat in a lot, which is not really what Leicester are used to. Leicester are used to the opposition having a lot of the ball and then hitting them on the break. But teams have discovered that about them now. And I think for now until the end of the season, we've mentioned Leicester, they've got the kindest run-in of any of the title contenders, but there's going to be a lot of difficult games like that now where they need to use their own guile to break down teams rather than hitting them quickly on the counter-attack. But how many times down the years have we said victories like that are the sign of champions? We didn't expect to be saying it about Leicester, but you know, to get that that goal in the 89th minute after not playing at their best, being frustrated for long spells by Norwich, to get that goal, absolutely priceless. And if the 2 week break after the Arsenal game didn't solve their problems and maybe get it completely out of their heads, then that victory definitely would, because they won in a similar fashion to the way they lost, and they'll just be feeling over the moon to have got that victory, because it looked like being a pretty damaging one for them, because obviously Tottenham and Arsenal playing on Sunday, they could have closed the gap. Tottenham could have even gone top of the league had Leicester only drawn that game on goal difference. So a big victory for Leicester, and a big victory for Tottenham as well, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and just going back to United quickly, what do you think about what that win could do for their season, just before we move on to some of the other teams? You know, 3 points now behind City in fourth place, who obviously City do have the game in hand because they had that League Cup final this weekend. But what about United? Last week we sort of said, you know, wrote them off for the top four because, you know, we knew they were playing Arsenal and didn't really expect them to, you know, get a win in that game. But what about them now? Any chance now maybe they go for the top four, even with all the injuries?
I think there is a chance now. I think they've given themselves a huge boost for that victory, not only with the 3 points, but the belief it will give them. As you mentioned, the gap is only 3 points now, which is by no means unassailable. And although Man City do have a game in hand, they've got some difficult games coming up. The question is whether United can maintain this current form. They've done really well to get 3 back-to-back victories with their injuries. You have to say that to their credit, because they've been forced to name a makeshift side on so many occasions this season. And for all the criticism Louis van Gaal has had, he's had to contend with some terrible injury crisis so far this season. So to still be in the mix for the top four, he deserves a little bit of credit. I mean, he should be up there challenging for the title for the amount of money he spent. But to have brought in the likes of Marcus Rashford, given faith in them, and then be rewarded, Rashford deserves a lot of credit for that as well. I think they're back in the top four race. I still think it's going to be difficult, and you can't discount the likes of West Ham and Southampton, who are both in decent form and not too far away themselves. It's all about the Man City game in hand, I think. If they win that game in hand and the rest of the top, if Arsenal bounce back quickly, and you'd expect Leicester and Tottenham to be pretty much safe in that top four. If Arsenal can bounce back and City win their game in hand, then it's going to make things difficult for United. But that victory certainly puts the pressure on their local rivals, and it's going to be interesting to see over the final stages of the season whether they can salvage something, because from that position you'd expect them to get, before the season last summer, you'd expect them to get top four, but from the position they found themselves in at various stages of the season, towards the turn of the year, you know, when Van Gaal looked destined for the sack, to then make the top four would be regarded as something of a success under the circumstances.
Yeah, and I think if City don't pull away, and you know, they sort of stay within, you know, touching distance, you know, heading into the next couple of months, you know, and say City are still a little way back behind the leaders, we know what their ambition is this season. It's the Champions League, isn't it? So maybe, you know, they might even, because if, you know, they might just stop thinking about the Premier League a little bit and say, I don't know, say they get, we expect them obviously to get past Kiev in the second leg there, and say they get a kind draw in the next step round, then they're through to the semis. You know, they're only three wins, or, you know, a win in the semi-final and then a win in the final from, you know, European glory, which would be amazing for them, and that could potentially affect them there. And that's, I think that's what United be hoping for. But then at the same time, you know, United, they're still in the Europa League as well, aren't they? So European football could certainly have a factor with this. But just back to Leicester quickly, I think what it's going to be about in the next couple of months is how they really handle this pressure, because I think it's either in this month or next month. I think they've got five televised fixtures in a row. You know, all the pressure's going to be on. I know they've had a lot of spotlight as it is anyway, but it's going to be even more as we get even closer to the end of the season. It's whether these players, who a lot of them haven't been in a situation anything like this before, whether they can handle it.
Yeah, and it is going to be interesting to see how they do handle it, because everything, all the vibes you get from the club so far have been, you know, Claudio Ranieri is keeping expectations down a bit, and it's good to see they don't seem like they are feeling any pressure. There was maybe hints of it in that Norwich game, but that victory, if they hadn't won that Norwich game, I think the pressure would have been right on them, and people would have been saying, you know, that Arsenal defeat has really burst their bubble, and they would have plummeted, not from favourites to about third or maybe even fourth favourites in the title race had they not won that Norwich game. But to get that victory, I think, will raise belief again. And I do think the party line from the club is obviously that they're just happy to be here, and there is no pressure on the shoulders, because whatever happens, they've had a great season, far, far beyond anything they could have expected. And I do get that feeling from the club at the moment. And with the upcoming fixtures, most of them are pretty kind to them. Watford's the only one on the horizon, which really looks difficult in upcoming in March. So the fixtures are kind for them, which is a big factor. If they can get a good amount of run of results after that, then I think the confidence will supersede the pressure that will be building on their shoulders. When it gets to the final 5-6 games of the season and it actually becomes within touching distance of the title, that's when the real questions will ask. When it's not, you know, we're happy to be here, it will be more like, we can't blow this now. And those three final games, we mentioned them against United, Everton and Chelsea, are going to be huge for them. But for me, so far, all the signs I've seen have been pretty good that they're handling the pressure well so far, and I think they'll continue to do so at least for the next few weeks.
Yep, so just 11 games of the season left now, and Leicester's still 2 points above Spurs going into this midweek's fixtures. But let's go back to yesterday and the showpiece match at Wembley, League Cup final, Liverpool against Man City. City, probably the better team over most of it, but Liverpool got back in it later on through Coutinho, forced extra time, no goals in extra time, and then penalties. City coming out on top 3-1 in the end. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, it took a while to get going, I think. The second half was a lot more entertaining than the first. First was very, very tense, really, and nothing to separate the two sides. Obviously, Aguero hit the post, a good save for Mignolet there, but that was the only real chance for either side. It was a very even match, pretty much fought in the middle third of the pitch for the vast, vast majority of it. Second half did improve a lot, and that got sparked by a Mignolet error from Fernandinho's goal. Really can't be letting that one go in such a big moment, and obviously the knives were being sharpened for Mignolet, but he did redeem himself with a few unbelievable stops later in the second half, and then in extra time as well. Really, really good saves. A string of them, I think there was three or so really good stops from Mignolet, and sort of harked back to Jerzy Dudek in the 2005 Istanbul final, where he just looked unbeatable, he was saving everything, and you thought it could be Liverpool's day. But obviously devastating for any side to lose on penalties. For Klopp, it's now 4 cup finals in a row that he's lost. He's reached the cup final for 5 consecutive seasons, which is a good record, including that Champions League final at Wembley. It's a great record in cups, but when he gets to the final, he always seems to be on the losing side at the moment. And you do have to say City deserved the win over the 120 minutes. They were the better side, and they should have wrapped things up before Coutinho equalised. Sterling against his former club missed 2 absolute sitters, and as I mentioned, those Mignolet saves kept Liverpool in it as well. So City did deserve the victory, but that's not going to help Liverpool get over the result any sooner. It's a devastating one to lose on penalties, and to miss the chance to pick up silver. Obviously, he's still got the Europa League, but to miss the chance to pick up that piece of silverware just 4 months after taking over at the club will be hard for Klopp to take as well. There are positives to take from it. They did slowly improve, and they had their own chances to win the game out finally after Coutinho leveled things on late on. But for the vast majority of things, Liverpool just never really got going in that match.
One real positive for Liverpool from the game, if we just stick with them for a minute, the performance of Lucas Leiva at the back. He was immense back there, wasn't he?
He was, and obviously there were big question marks. He's been fantastic there pretty much every time he's played there this season, but there's big question marks over how he'd stand up to the test of Aguero, who, as we know, is one of the best strikers in world football. But he was immense at the back. He was probably man of the match, although he ended up on the losing side. Didn't deserve to end up on the losing side. He was clearing it. He was fantastic in the air, which was probably the most surprising thing. His positioning was superb, which again is surprising considering he's only really started playing there at times this season. And the fact that he was chosen ahead of Kolo Touré to start at centre back was a big sign of trust in him from Jurgen Klopp, and I wouldn't be too surprised to see him become one of the first choice centre backs now. Obviously Skrtel is still out, Lovren is out with illness, he's expected to come back soon. Sacco obviously had to go off in that final with what looked like a bit of concussion, so he might get a few chances to play then in a couple of weeks. And if he puts in performances like that every week, he's fast turning into Liverpool's best centre back. It was a great display.
Yeah, I would be quite surprised if he manages to, because I think Skrtel and Lovren both should be back very soon. And Sacco's been, one of their best players at the back this season. But, like I said, if he keeps playing like that, then surely you have to keep playing him because he was so good back there. As for Sissi, you talked about, obviously, disappointment for Jurgen Klopp, but for Manuel Pellegrini, that was the first trophy he won in 2014. He's done it again this year. And, the reception he got from the City fans was tremendous at the end, standing ovation when he, lifted the trophy towards them. And, he's taken this all in his stride since it was announced that he'd be leaving and Guardiola coming in at the end of the season. But he said after the game, people questioned his decision to play Willy Caballero in goal ahead of Joe Hart, but completely vindicated with some of the saves Caballero made in that shootout. I mean, the one from Lucas wasn't the hardest, but he did really well to get his hand up. And then the one was it from Lallana at the end, that was a really, really top save, just really firm hand down to his right, and he did superbly. And he said after the match that he'd rather lose the final than go back on his words. He'd always said that Caballero was his League Cup goalkeeper, and he did well to choose him, and Caballero repaid the faith. I think it was Caballero's first trophy since 2003 when he was with Boca Juniors, so a really special moment for him as well. But Pellegrini, really happy after the match, and yeah, like you say, City really did deserve it, didn't they?
They did, and Pellegrini deserves it as well. I think he's a classy fellow. He's handled the whole thing with Guardiola with real class. And I think when he got appointed, there was a statement from the board saying they wanted him to average a trophy a season over the next 5 years. And with that trophy, he's done that now. Obviously, won the League Cup and Premier League in his first season in charge. Nothing last season, but then got the League Cup again this season. And still in the Premier League, still in the Champions League. Would be fantastic if he managed to take them all away in the Champions League. I can't really see that happening. But Premier League with a fully fit side back, That's still up for grabs, that one. Obviously, we've mentioned already, he's got the game in hand that would take them back to within 6 points of leaders Leicester. So they've still got a chance in the Premier League, but I think that the most important thing was to sign off with at least one piece of silver. The League Cup was obviously, them being in the final, was obviously their biggest chance of doing that. And so it is good for him to get it. He really does deserve it because he's been a really good manager for Man City, and he's been a likeable guy throughout his whole time in charge. There's not been any instances really where he's shown up badly. He's always shown class when he's been involved in any sort of controversy or anything like that, so he certainly deserves it, I think. And as you mentioned, while Klopp would be disappointed not to start with a trophy, I think Pellegrini deserves to finish with one.
Yeah, just touching on a couple of City players that one's really impressed me, one hasn't at all. Since Kompany came back, I think he's been really good, because we sort of mentioned earlier on this season that the last couple of years he seemed to maybe lost his way a little bit, wasn't as solid as he first was, when City, leading City to the Premier League title. But he really impressed me. I thought he did really well against Sturridge yesterday. But then up the other end, I think Sterling's having a real shocker the last couple of months. I've really not been that impressed with him. You mentioned that miss that he had, but he seems to lose the ball dribbling to cul-de-sacs he can never get out of, and just really not impressing me personally. I don't know what your take is on those two players.
Well, yeah, Kompany has been fantastic. The difference in just the cohesion between the defence is huge when he's been playing. And you think about the two contrasting games between Liverpool and Man City this season, when Liverpool won 4-1 at the Etihad without Kompany playing. Just the City defence was all at sea, couldn't get to grips with Liverpool's just movement in attack. And Liverpool actually started yesterday's final in a similar fashion, with a lot of movement, a lot of slick passing, and Coutinho, Firmino popping up all over the place. but there was no such problems for City that time because they had company marshalling the defence, and then, you know, that bright start from Liverpool quickly fizzled out, and they looked comfortable until the 83rd minute when Coutinho got the equaliser. They looked really comfortable throughout the match. So yeah, he's been superb since coming back, and the difference between having him in the side and not is massive for Man City. And if he had been fit all season, I think they'd be top of the Premier League personally. As for Sterling, those misses yesterday were, if they'd gone on to lose the final, they would have been inexcusable, really. He's got to finish them. It's the one criticism, really, that's been labelled at him most over the early stages of his career. His finishing isn't really good enough. If he can add goals to his game, he's got all the attributes to become truly world-class, a really good player. He did have a good game against Kiev. You have to point that out for him. He performed well in that match, but he hasn't really hit the heights of a £50 million man so far for Man City for me. Obviously, he's still young, and I think he's got more potential probably than any other young player in England at the moment. I think he's up there with maybe Dele Alli as well. You put in that bracket as real stars of the future for England. So you do need to give him a bit of time. He hasn't reached the £50 million heights yet, just yet, and he does need to add goals to his game. But I think you give him a bit of time. I think he is going to develop into a top-class player.
Is he in your England starting lineup for Euro 2016?
Interesting one. That would change, I think, over the course of the rest of the season with Sturridge, if he can stay fit and get firing. Welbeck's obviously made a pretty quick comeback as well, so they'd all be in line to be in those attacking positions. Right now, I think Sterling, he probably would be in there. Oh. I think he would, with maybe Ali and Barkley. Rooney, there's a big question mark over him, obviously, with injury. So if he's not fit and ready to go to the Euros, then Sterling obviously stands a better chance. But I think he'd just scrape him. But there's so much that could change a lot by the time the Euros come about, I think.
Oh, I just think there's so many players who are playing so much better this season than Sterling. You know, well, you've got Kane and Vardy up front. You know, probably only one of those is going to start. Like you said, if Sturridge stays fit between now and the end of the season, he's then vying for maybe Roy Hodgson even changes formation to go two strikers, and I know Sturridge could drop deeper. Then, like you say, you've got Rooney as well, who's the captain, obviously, and I know he's out injured at the moment. We're not sure how long it's going to take to come back and how he's going to play once he comes back, but if Rooney's fit, he's going to go. He's the captain, and you know, we know that Roy likes him. He's probably going to play. And like you say, Dele Alli, fantastic season. I think he offers a lot more. Barkley, the same. I just think that they offer so much more than Sterling. I think he might start just because he's obviously been an England regular now for, you know, a good year or so, a good year and a half. But when you compare that to some of the other players, I really don't think he should, personally. That's just my personal view. But anyway, back to Liverpool. And just quickly, we're going to touch on the Europa League draw, because when we recorded the last episode on Friday, it was just before the Europa League draw was made. Liverpool obviously getting Man United, bitter rivals, going head-to-head in Europe for the first time. As a Liverpool fan, pleased with the draw or not?
Yeah, very pleased. It's a fantastic draw, I think. It's about as good as one as you could hope for. Obviously, there's a lot of eyes on whether Liverpool would draw Dortmund because of the Jurgen Klopp connection. But to draw United, it would have been great at any stage of the Europa League. Would have been a great final for any Liverpool or United fan. But to draw your biggest rivals, the two most successful clubs in English football history, to finally go head-to-head on the continental stage is a huge occasion. I think it's going to be I don't know whether the actual games are going to be classics, because neither side have exactly done justice to their history so far this season. Neither side are at their best, but you know, as an occasion, I think it's going to be really special. It's going to be fantastic to see those two go head-to-head, and it would be massive bragging rights to get the first European victory over either of their bitter rivals, whoever manages to go through. And it's obviously such a huge competition for both clubs, because the Champions League spot next season is potentially at stake if they can go all the way. You mentioned United maybe back in the top four race. Liverpool aren't in the top four race this season. They've only got the Europa League to contend with. United is still very high up on their priority list, so there's a lot to play for both sides. And even if there wasn't anything to play for, that fixture always brings up some big talking points, and is always the one both team players from both clubs really want to win. So I think it's going to be a fantastic occasion. Delighted with the draw.
Yeah, it should be good. The only thing I'd say is that there was almost too many good draws in this last 16 stage, and I kind of worry maybe about the last eight quarterfinals and then on from there. But you know, the other one, obviously everyone wanted to avoid Dortmund. Spurs get them. You know, you've got Spurs, second best team in England this year. Dortmund, second in the Bundesliga. That's a fantastic tie on paper. You know, Spurs have been playing some great stuff this year. Dortmund, obviously with Aubameyang and some of their other players, Royce, you know, they've got some absolutely class players. I think that's the pick of the ties this round. I know Liverpool United, all the history there and two English clubs, but I think that game, Spurs and Dortmund, should be an absolute cracker. You look at some of the others as well, you know, two Spanish teams, Valencia, Gary Neville's Valencia up against Bilbao, who they lost 3-0 to at the weekend at home in La Liga. So that's there's a little bit of recent history there. Villarreal, Bayer Leverkusen, that's a good one because Bayer, they look good in their tie. Villarreal knocked out Napoli, didn't they, in the last round? So some really good teams there. But what's your take on the Spurs-Dortmund tie?
Yeah, it should be a really good one. As you mentioned, if it's you're just judging it on an actual game, what you expect to be the best game of the round, then yeah, it would be Dortmund Tottenham Hotspur. Obviously, I don't think that match is an occasion of Liverpool United one, but just as everyone would have been wanting to avoid Dortmund, I think everyone would have been wanting to avoid Tottenham as well, because they, as you mentioned, they've been fantastic form this season, second in the Premier League, and that 3-0 second leg win over Fiorentina. Okay, Fiorentina weren't at their best in that game, but it's a very impressive victory, and to dump out one of Italy's better sides, who they lost to the season before, shows the progress Tottenham are making at the moment. And they'll go into that tie really confident that they can maybe progress to the next round as well, and a good European run. We've mentioned maybe it would go down the priority list in terms of challenging on in the Premier League, which would be their main goal for the season. But I think if they can go on a good European run as well, and couple that with the Premier League, it's going to be turning into a fantastic season, especially if they can beat Dortmund. If they get the scalp of Borussia Dortmund, it's going to be huge for Spurs. And it is a really mouth-watering tie, really, that one. It's a tough one to call, I think. Dortmund, I think, would be just about be favourites, but Tottenham got a really good chance.
Yeah, so would you say the winner of the whole thing comes from that tie?
Potentially, there are other clubs who can do it. I think both Liverpool and United will fancy their chances. Bilbao as well. Villarreal can't be underestimated, having beaten Napoli, of course. And Leverkusen, you mentioned earlier, they've got some great players. Hernandez, in particular, in fantastic form. So, as we mentioned in the last episode on Friday, there's so many teams there who would harbour realistic ambitions of going the whole way. But Dortmund and Tottenham would certainly be amongst the two favourites for me.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, watch out for Villarreal, because that just reading back about that game against Napoli, so impressive to beat them. And like I said, I think, yeah, the winner of either Spurs Dortmund or Villarreal Bayer, I fancy one of those two teams, whoever comes through those ties. But let's before we look ahead to match day 28 in the Premier League, just a couple of other games from last weekend. You really enjoyed the West Brom Palace game, didn't you?
Yeah, fantastic game that was. Just out of the blue, really. I predicted a 0-0 going into that, because both sides were in terrible form and just couldn't really even buy a goal, let alone a victory going into that game. So it had all the makings of a pretty dull stalemate. But you know, West Brom just came flying out the blocks. Palace were dreadful in the first half, but West Brom raced into a 3-goal lead. They only scored 24 goals all season before this, mind you, and they scored 3 goals in half an hour there. The third of which was an absolute beauty, great team goal and fantastic ball over the top, and Berahino finally starting to get a run of starts in the team in the Premier League now, and he's rewarding them with a goal there. A really good finish from him, and I think his inclusion, Pulis likened it to Leicester missing Vardy all season or Tottenham missing Kane all season. The fact that they've been missing him, for the obviously he's been available, but he hasn't really been in the right frame of mind, and lacking perhaps a bit of match fitness as well. So to have him back, he's apologised to the fans now. He should have his mind set firmly on the task at hand now for West Brom. So to have that back is a huge boost for West Brom. And they looked to have the game sewn up by half time. It was so hard to see Palace coming back into it after they put in a dreadful, dreadful first half performance, and the form they were in as well. It's tough to see them scoring 3 goals, but they came back, they made a good fist of it in the second half, a much improved performance. Bellassi came on at half time, just changed things completely with his attacking run, and it was a really good performance from him. Obviously Connor Wickham getting the 2 goals, his first 2 goals from open play all season, and the second of them was an absolute worldie, one of the best goals of the season, a certain goal of the season contender for me. Just could not have struck that any better, could not have placed it any better. It was just a perfect strike from him. Unfortunately for Palace, they fell just short, but a lot of positives to take from that second half. First half performance was truly dreadful, probably the worst they would have put in under Pardew. They offered absolutely nothing. Adebayor, in particular up front, was just anonymous, completely anonymous. He got taken off at half time, and they looked a different prospect. And although it ended in another defeat, it's now 10 games without a win for Palace in the Premier League, which is the longest run in the division, and they'll be looking over their shoulders now at the relegation zone. There are big positives to take from that second half, I think, which is important for them.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see that they've actually dropped all the way down to 14th now. Obviously, West Brom going above them with that win, but you know, 14th Palace, considering where they were, and you know, they're up there with the likes of West Ham and challenging up there with West Ham, you know, Man United in the first half of the season, but down in 14th now, 32 points, and I mean, they've still got an 8-point cushion there to the bottom three, and the way it looks, you know, with Swansea getting beat the other day, and it does look, Bournemouth got a point as well, so it still does look like it's going to be Sunderland, Newcastle, Norwich and Swansea, two of those four going down with Villa, obviously. And I don't know, has anything changed for you in the relegation battle recently? Who do you still see, Norwich and Sunderland, I think it was we picked before?
Yeah, I do. I still, there's a question mark over Sunderland though, because as we mentioned him before, Sam Allardyce, I think this the midweek game between Sunderland and Palace is a huge one. I mentioned that the positives Palace would take, but Sunderland are going into that game in the better form. Palace only got 1 point from the last 8 Premier League games, which is relegation form, and a win for Sunderland there, as well as bringing the Black Cats out of the relegation zone potentially, would drop Palace into even bigger trouble. And it'd be, you know, it wasn't too long ago I was saying Palace were one good centre forward away from being Champions League contenders, and now they find themselves in the relegation battle, so it has been a remarkable drop from them. I think Sunderland, they've shown over the last few weeks that they're going to make a real fight of it to try and survive. And Norwich, I would say, are probably going to go down. They're in dreadful form at the moment. Newcastle, they've spent the money, they've got the players capable of staying up, but there's always that Allardyce and that Defoe factor over Sunderland, and they can get the wins. And some of their performances recently have been much improved. Okay, they haven't got great results recently, but the performances have given cause for hope, and they've got a good chance. It's tough to call right now. I'd say, obviously, Aston Villa down, Norwich perhaps down, but it's too close to call for me between the next two, either Newcastle or Sunderland probably. Swansea aren't out of it just yet, but Newcastle and Sunderland look like the more likely of the two.
Yeah, I'd actually say Sunderland maybe got the best chance out of those teams now, because I've honestly really impressed with them against West Ham. It was a really slow start to the game, very windy, and then the pitch was not in a good condition either, but you know, it was Van Aanholt made a silly mistake, Antonio got it off him, and then Antonio scored a really good goal. But second half especially, Sunderland had so many good chances. Adrian made a couple of good saves, a couple of really bad misses as well, but Sunderland really impressed me, you know, beating United the game before that as well. So honestly, I've been really impressed with them, and the way Swansea are going, you know, bar Fabianski making a string of saves, I think the Spurs finished with about 35 odd shots yesterday. You know, had he not, you know, put in such an inspired display, Spurs probably would have won that easier than they did. And I think Swansea might be in a bit of trouble, really. And like you say, Newcastle, well, they've got a game in hand now, because their game was affected with the League Cup final. And then you look at the fixtures, like you say, that game for Sunderland against Palace is absolutely huge to them, because when you see who the other teams are playing in midweek, you've got Norwich at home to Chelsea, and Chelsea playing a bit better. They weren't great at the weekend, Chelsea, but they managed to fight back from a goal down to win at Southampton, who they kept 6 clean sheets in a row, hadn't they? And you look at some of them, who the other teams are playing. Villa, they've got Everton at home. You expect Everton, who didn't play at the weekend, you expect them to win that one. Newcastle go to Stoke, that's not an easy game either. Swansea obviously going to Arsenal going to be desperate to get back to winning ways after their result of the weekend. So like I said, that game for Sunderland with all the other fixtures this week, it's massive for them, Sunderland. As for the top of the table, we've got two real standout fixtures in the top half: West Ham against Spurs, and then a rematch against between Liverpool and City straight away. Which are those two games you're looking forward to more?
Well, Liverpool City, obviously, is going to be a good chance for Liverpool to get some immediate revenge on City. It's going to be interesting to see. Sometimes there's a bit of a hangover from the League Cup final, whether you're successful or unsuccessful. So it'll be interesting to see which team bounces back mainly from that, particularly as it went all the way to penalties. There's going to be some tired legs there. You'd have to say, in terms of the Premier League, it's a much bigger game for City. They'd need a win, really, to stay in the title race, and a draw might just be enough, but a defeat would be a pretty damning blow to their title hopes, particularly if Leicester beat West Brom the night before. So City could go to Anfield 12 points off the pace in the title race, which is a huge, huge gap to make up with what would only be 10 games of the season left for the rest of the teams, 11 games of the season left for Man City. Real big ask for them, so it would put massive pressure on them going to Anfield if Leicester get the victory. As for the West Ham Tottenham game, always a really good game. I love those games. There's big rivalry between the two sides, and London derby, it's always a good feel to the game as well. It's often quite open, often quite a few goals, and a huge game for Tottenham in particular for their title hopes as well. Again, Leicester playing the night before them, got the chance to put the a real pressure on the three teams directly below them in the table. Tottenham responded at the weekend. This will be a much bigger test against West Ham, who themselves are in good form and who themselves have European ambitions, because you know they're only 1 point behind Manchester United, only 4 points behind the top four. You'd probably say Champions League is a bit beyond them this season, but they're certainly in good form. And under Bilic, you know, they've lost the same amount of games as Arsenal this season, so they're a tough team to beat. They could have a big say in the title race with a good result against Tottenham this weekend and give their own European hopes a massive boost.
Yeah, I think, well, for Spurs, you know, that's six Premier League wins in a row now, and you know, managing to come from behind against Swansea yesterday without, you know, Kane getting on the score sheet. You know, he'd be obviously wearing that mask with a broken nose. But now these two games they've got this week, West Ham away, which, like you said, very big occasion, and then even bigger at the weekend, Saturday lunchtime, Spurs-Arsenal. That is going to be a massive game, isn't it? Especially, well, depending on, you'd expect Arsenal to come past Swansea, and say if they all win in midweek, then that Arsenal-Spurs game, if Spurs then beat Arsenal there, surely that's Arsenal's chances over, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd have to think so, and it's one of the biggest North London derbies in recent times. I think that both teams obviously gunning for the title, and even if Tottenham don't pick up the victory against West Ham and Arsenal do pick up the victory, I think it's going to be a massive, massive game, because then it's almost make or break for either side in the title race. If whoever loses that game might be out of the title race, particularly if Leicester keep up their form and beat West Brom on the Tuesday this weekend, and then pick up another victory at the weekend as well. So it's a huge, huge game on the horizon for them. But Tottenham can't really afford to take one eye off West Ham, because the Hammers are in good form themselves and a real tough nut to crack. If they drop points at that, they could lose some of the momentum that they built up over the last few weeks, and that could have a pretty big impact on their title hopes.
Yeah. Okay. And just before we finish this week, we're just going to quickly touch on this weekend's La Liga action. Barcelona last night home to Sevilla, who are incidentally the last team to actually beat them. Barca equaling the record, I think it was, for a Spanish team's unbeaten run. I think it was, is it 32, around 32 games?
34, I think, yeah.
2-1 win against Sevilla. Fell behind in that game, Vitolo with the volley, but then Messi scored an absolutely glorious free kick right into the top corner. They come out with the win, but then you compare that to Real Madrid. Madrid derby, they lose at home to Atletico. Third year in a row that Atletico have won at the Bernabeu. And you know, after the game, Cristiano Ronaldo really not endearing himself to a lot of the media, a lot of fans. He was criticising his teammates openly. And when you compare the stuff he's saying with, you know, I mean, I know he'd love to play alongside, you know, say if he had Suarez and Neymar either side of him, it'd be brilliant. But, you know, you compare the joy that Barcelona seem to always play with compared to if Ronaldo's not getting his way and now just openly criticising his teammates. What do you make of that whole situation?
Yeah, you can't really do that, can you? I mean, he is right. If everyone was good at him, they would be top of the table. But, you know, everyone's obviously not as good as him. He's one of the greatest players of all time. And there's nothing anyone at the club can do about the injuries, really. Bale's out. Benzema was out in the Madrid derby as well. So there's nothing he could do to criticise the players that came in. And although he tried to temper it a bit by saying they are good players, they're just not as good as Bale or Benzema, whatever way you slice it, it's a pretty damning indictment on the players that they're not good enough to compete with the likes of Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. And it's never going to go down well criticising any teammates. If you're gonna dig any teammates out, it's got to be in private. You can't do it in public. So I think that was pretty unprofessional from Ronaldo. It's probably frustration, because that's really the result that completely kills off their title hopes. 12 points behind Barcelona now, and with Barcelona in that form, that is an unassailable gap. There's no chance of them bringing that back. So probably frustration at finally surrendering the title to Barcelona, but you know, you've got to keep your head there. You can't really, maybe it was a call for Madrid to invest in a bit more depth in their squad, but even so, do that privately as well. You can't really excuse what Ronaldo said there. And you mentioned the contrast between Barcelona. There's only good things. That front three just seems to get on so well, and that seems to be part of why they are so good. And yeah, as I mentioned, they look unstoppable. Atletico Madrid maybe got a slither of a hope still with that victory at the Bernabeu, but they're 8 points behind, and it would take a very unlikely collapse from Barcelona to give them any chance as well. So it looks like Barcelona's title again, and to be honest, it looks like they're on course for a second consecutive treble, which would be an unbelievable achievement.
Yeah, if they manage that, that would be incredible. And I mean, as for Real, you know, you look at the table now, Villarreal just behind them, only 2 points behind them now. I mean, you know, if they don't sort it out soon, there's a chance that they might be, you know, battling to stay in that top three. And considering the players they've got, no matter how much Ronaldo complains or if he thinks the squad's not good enough. You know, they're the ones every year who always sign in players, and you know, especially where they've got potential transfer ban coming up as well, haven't they? So it'll be interesting to see where the club's going. But you know, it all started so well for Zidane, didn't it? But just going a bit rocky, and I think the Champions League is obviously the big thing for them now, isn't it? They had a good result in the first leg against Roma, and you expect them to go through, but that's, I mean, obviously, like you said, 12 points to Barca. Now with all the same amount of games played as well, there's no chance they're getting that back. But if they can, say if they meet, I mean, it'd be amazing if they meet in the Champions League, or if they can, you know, edge Barca to the Champions League title, that would, you know, certainly be make it a success somewhat this season. But those two, they play midweek as well, like the Premier League. Madrid, they're at Levante this week. Barca, they go to Vallecano. That's two games you can follow on sportsmore.co.uk. In midweek, we've also got live individual coverage of all 10 Premier League games on Tuesday and Wednesday. My thanks to Barney for joining us again this week. We'll be back for the next episode of the podcast on Thursday. See you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.